America leads the world in medicine development. It matters. We get new medicines first, nearly 3 years faster. 5 million Americans go to work because we make medicines here at home. And not relying on other countries keeps us safe. But China is racing to overtake us. Will we let them, or will we choose to stay ahead? When America leads, America cures. Let's tell Washington to keep us in the lead.
Learn how at americacures.com. Paid for by Pharma.
Welcome you back. It is another edition of Inside Boxing Live presented by PPV.com. It is Dan Canobio. It is Chris Algieri. He fought Ruslan Provodnikov for a broken orbital bone. We will be discussing broken orbital bones on this very episode. Chris, I'm a little, come to this episode a little downtrodden. Nothing that happened in the boxing world that is making me sad. It's the baseball world. I don't know if anyone cares. Juan Soto has chose the New York Mets over the Yankees.
I saw that.
What world are we living in where Yankees are losing out prized free agents to the Mets?
That's 2024 has been weird. This is another another example of it being strange. Look, Dan, you're not even wearing your Yankee hat today. Are you that upset?
I am a little. $800 million if he gets everything he gets out of that deal. That's why he chose it. Like,
and what was it, a 3-year deal?
No, it's a 15-year deal.
Oh, wow. That's crazy. All right. Well.
The first 5 years.
How do you make a 15-year deal?
41 years old he'll be when the deal is completed.
Yeah, again, how do you make in a professional athlete? How do you make baseball, a 15-year deal? That's crazy.
The revenues are nuts. Like, you think boxing's got crazy money in it, and you see like what Canelo makes for one fight is crazy. Juan Soto will be making that every single year for 16 years, guaranteed. What Canelo makes in one fight, the $50 million.
If I'm that guy's wife, I would bubble wrap him.
Well, I don't think he's married. He's 26, young guy. He's not married. But as a Yankee fan,
smart guy.
New York has been flipped upside down in the last couple hours. I have boxing to talk about and to get me out. It's usually the other way around. I go to baseball to get me out of
the boxing. Yeah,
the boxing nonsense. Now I'm doing the opposite. We have a lot of fights to talk about. It was a nice busy weekend of fights. It was nice to see. Had the double screens working on Saturday night. I had my DAZN app going. I had ESPN, ESPN Plus. That's how Saturday nights are supposed to be if you're a boxing fan. Let's start with what we saw in the main event on ESPN. We'll talk about that card first. Emmanuel Navarrete just steamrolls Oscar Valdez, sixth round TKO. The first fight, there was a lot of discussion about, do we need this rematch? Do we have to really have to see this again? Because the first fight wasn't that competitive. This one was like a wipeout. Like, Valdez just got his ass handed to him by Navarrete, who was, I said, when Navarrete's on, he's pretty much unstoppable. And he was on this night, Chris, throwing those counter uppercuts. Everything was landing. Navarrete, I apologize to you, bro, because I picked Valdez in this fight for the value. And boy, was I wrong. Navarrete, when he's on, he's on. When he's off, he's off. But Saturday night, he was on.
But on, especially when he's at 130. When he's at 130, I always thought like size was a big part of why he was so dominant, like at 26 and 22. Because guys, this is his third weight class. He tried to go for a fourth at 135, and he just didn't have that physical advantage like he has in these lighter weights. But at 30, yeah, he's a problem. And you know, Dan, you asked like, oh, do we really need this rematch? Well, in hindsight, no, we did not, because Valdez took a hellacious beating that he really doesn't need at this age of his career.
Yeah, we'll talk about Valdez in a second, like what this means for him, because I think he's done at the top level. Like, he might be able to take a couple more fights if he wants. He's only 32, but as we spoke about,
yeah,
in the past,
but he's long in the 232.
Right. He has that broadcasting career ahead of him. He has his life ahead of him.
He's also got a fantastic career. Like, he's had an incredible amount of success and what he's been able to accomplish. I mean, talk about amateurs, you know, Mexican Olympic team, multiple division world champion. He's had some like fight of the year type fights. That fight with Scott Quigg was awesome. Like, a tremendous, like, amazing, epic night that he won. So how much more is there to do for a guy like that?
Yeah, I mean, this was his last stand, I thought, and I thought he would put up a little better of a fight, and he gave him a valiant effort, but this night was about Emmanuel Navarrete, just able to land early and often. There's a clip on Twitter that's going around from Top Rank where Navarrete throws a counter uppercut right hand that knocks the mouthpiece out of Valdez's mouth in slow mo. I've watched it like 1,000 times because
Valdez took that punch well. I was surprised because it was like it was a really hard shot and that he didn't see coming. Mouthpiece flies out, but he actually took that punch really well.
Well, who the heck throws a counter uppercut, no look, so wide, and lands it it lands it perfectly on the chin?
That's Navarrete. That's him in a bow, wrapped up in a bow. That's Navarrete. Crazy wild uppercuts from halfway across the ring.
It's unbelievable. This guy is a force. I keep saying, there's always this asterisk of when he's on. Because he went up to 135 against Baranchuk. I guess that was just a bad night because he looked pretty bad in that fight, and he ends up losing that. Goes back down to 130, and that's where I had all my pause, and that's where I had all my hesitation.
Well, he looked bad with Liam Walsh, as well, before going up to 35. Wilson. Yeah. I keep saying Walsh. Liam Wilson, yes. Who was, you know, a tough guy, good left hook, but... You know, Oscar destroyed him after that, and you know he gave Navarrete hell when they fought.
If you use that theory right there, you think about it. Like, use that triangle theory in boxing doesn't always work, but you got it. Like, the math
almost never
works.
Okay,
never works. But the math was like, all right, Valdez looked good against a common opponent, where Navarrete didn't. Navarrete's coming back down in weight. Like, this was
well. This is why you bet Valdez, bud. You took all that. You let the money line make you think, the odds made you think, like, hey, you know, he's coming off a bad performance where he lost at 35. He hasn't looked good since the last time they fought. He lost, you know, the Liam Wilson fight was tough. Maybe Valdez could do it. Nah.
No.
You got duped, bud. You got duped.
Yeah, the plus 400 was staring at me. And I didn't necessarily think that he was going to win. You know, I put that out when I tweeted it. It's like, listen, like, I'm not necessarily thinking that Navarrete's going to lose this fight or Valdez is going to win. I was like, that value there is just too nice. And it was. It ended up being too good to be true. For Navarrete, what he does next, he talked about wanting to go to 135. Like, he talked about it in the lead up to this fight, where he's got some unfinished business there. The title picture there is a little more complicated when it comes to fights with Top Rank and all that. I don't know if Navarrete can get Baranchuk, who seems is, I don't know if he's fighting with on the Riyadh cards. He might be, he might not be. But some of the other names at 130, I don't think he can get in there. So maybe a move to, 135. I don't know. Maybe he stays at 130. They're talking about him going up against Espinosa, who we'll talk about in a second, which an all-Mexican clash, which would be amazing. So I don't know. Would you say to stay at 130? You know, he's 29, but I feel like he's an old 29 as well. Like, he doesn't have that build like a traditional fighter has. That's a lot, like, another thing too. But should he stay at 130? Should he go to 135? I think he should kind of stay at 130. See how much longer he can go there.
I think he should stay 130. I think there's good fights to be made, fights that he can win. I'm going to go back to those physical advantages that he has in these lighter weight classes. He just doesn't have that at 35. 35 guys start getting bigger, and I don't know. I think there's good fights for him. You mentioned the Espinosa fight, which makes a ton of sense. Espinosa is definitely moving up in weight soon, you know, from 26 to come up to 30. And that's, I think, because it looks like they're building Espinosa to be like the next Mexican great. Like, they want him to be that guy. And you got to, if Navarrete is still fighting, you got to fight that guy and beat him if you're going to be considered the top dog in the lighter weights as a Mexican. So fight makes too much sense not to happen.
Anthony Cacice, Cacace.
Cacace.
Cacace, I don't know if he's staying at 130.
Yeah, what's he doing? He's big. He's a big 30-pounder, so maybe not.
Oshaki Foster, who is in attendance, he's staying. Top Rank. Oshaki Foster versus Emmanuel Navarrete is a good stylistic clash. You know, you got your boxer versus your brawler. I would favor Navarrete in that fight.
I don't think
Foster has enough to keep him off. So that could be a fight that could be made with Top Rank. That's a unification as well.
That's the thing about Navarrete. Yes, he's a heavy-handed guy, but he's a volume guy too. So I think that would give Oshaki fits to have to deal with him all night long. Because that's what gave Oshaki trouble against Conceição, was him being busy. It was the busyness of Conceição was able to really give Shock problems. And if you got a guy who's busy and hits hard, I agree with you. I would favor.
That was the biggest thing I took away from that fight, Chris, was like Navarrete's motor. It's insane. Like 60, 70 punches around from all these angles.
He was different this fight, though. He's smart, too. He was setting things up. You could really see the gears are moving in that night. You know, he learned from that first fight. He was setting traps. Valdez was walking right into stuff. I was very impressed with Navarrete because it wasn't just him over, you know, just running over an old man. He was setting up some good shots, landing some tricky punches. And consistent. Dude, he finished him to the body. 10 count with a body shot, like to a Mexican. Great. That's you know, an excellent Mexican fighter. I don't want to say great yet, but yeah, that's a big deal.
There's Lamont Roach, who's fighting at 135 against Javonta Davis. There's Ray Ford, who is
Ray.
Gotten to the weight class, but he's got a Wicker's way up a little bit, and he's also with Matchroom. Joe Cordina, Matchroom. So there isn't, like, I think it's Foster or he goes with Espinosa, mm-hmm. who, you know, just looks like a movie star. And Top Rank, you can just see, is giving him the preferential treatment and mm-hmm. has him geared up to be the next star. We can talk about him too in this doubleheader. But anything else you want to talk about with Valdez? If this is the end for him, heck of a career. Mm-hmm. I was reading up on him, a story from Top Rank when they were talking about when they first signed him, all the high hopes they had for him. And I think he exceeded those expectations. Mexican fighter with a huge fan base, won world titles, was in entertaining fights. Just a really classy dude as well, like a good representative of boxing. I'm not trying to write him off just yet. Who knows where he can go from here? But in terms of him getting to the top again or getting to a title shot, that's going to be a really long road that I don't really think he needs to necessarily take. But hats off to Oscar Valdez if this is the end.
Yeah, I said it before when we did our pre-fight show that a loss here for Valdez, it really doesn't leave him much room for anything else. He's had a great career. He has a burgeoning commentator career ahead of him now. It's just what are you sticking around for at this point? You know, he had his old Mexican clash. He's trying to get his revenge fight. It went worse than the first time. So I don't know. I think he can walk up to the sunset and hang his head high.
What about going back to Navarrete, like 135, like Keyshawn Davis? I know he has his sights set on title fights and getting a title shot at the WBO. There's also a discussion about, like, Navarrete. Look what Navarrete did to Valdez, but Shakur couldn't stop him. I know I hate that theory in boxing because they're all different times. When Valdez fought Shakur, he was a little fresher. Yeah. But, you know, that's how we do it in boxing. We compare mm-hmm. performances, we compare opponents, and then you figure out what you like out of it.
Yeah, I wouldn't. I avoid boxing math as much as I can and comparing, you know, those types of guys with such different styles and approaches. And it's also, you got to remember, it's the second time that they fought Valdez. So, yeah, he stopped him the second time. Didn't stop him the first time. Didn't even come close. So he had more rounds to figure him out. And also, Valdez is just longer in the tooth. He's getting older. So I can't compare the results of Navarrete Valdez and Shakur based on that. So, and again,
that's
just
for
totally
Twitter
different.
To do.
Totally different styles. I don't think Navarrete could hit Shakur with a bag of birdseed. Let alone, you know. So I can't use that boxing math at all.
I don't think we're gonna see that, unfortunately. I don't think so. At 135. Like Navarrete versus Shakur would have been a really fun fight at 135, but when Shakur jetting to Matchroom and Navarrete sticking around there, who knows? Maybe we could see it down the road, but I mean that fight I feel like it's really not in the future of either fighter right now. Let's go to the 126 pound rematch that unfortunately we're talking about, which I thought was going to be a barn burner. The first fight was awesome. Talking about Rafael Espinosa and Robeci Ramirez. First fight was incredible. Second fight, not so much. Espinosa wins by sixth round TKO because Robeci Ramirez just could not continue anymore. Broken orbital bone that he claims came from a elbow. ESPN went back and looked for the elbow in round five. He complained about it after round five, Ramirez. Didn't see an elbow. We saw like a grazing. I didn't see anything that would cause that to happen to an eye. What I did see from Rafael Espinosa, Chris, was a lot of right hands. A tremendous amount of right hands to the eye of Robeci Ramirez that ended up breaking his orbital bone. A lot of quitting conversation in boxing. We'll talk about that in a second. But Espinosa, this guy just looks like a star. Like just, he's got it written all over him. Yeah. Will he move up now to 130 and fight Navarrete, which could be a real star performance if he can stop him or beat him there? This guy's really, really good, and he's coming into his own now at age 30.
Yeah, I really think that that first fight with Robesi was really his coming out party, because the world got to see him. Not only did he show skill, he showed his, you know, just gigantic frame that he has for 26, but also he showed his metal and his nuts and guts, because he broke his foot in that fight when he went down. He fought the rest of the fight like that. Late rally to secure the win. Very, very close. Then he comes back, looks awesome in his comeback fight, knocking out, you know, a really kind of nondescript opponent, but doing what you're supposed to do with those kinds of guys. And then he gets the rematch with Robesi. And listen, I don't know what those judges were looking at. Like, two of those judges had Robesi ahead. I didn't see that at all. I thought he was fighting on his back foot the entire time. He was put in very uncomfortable positions. I don't care how many times you smile during a fight, you're not winning rounds, especially because Espinosa was putting a ton of pressure and, like you said, landing right hands. And the thing is, that eye didn't swell until that last right hand hit him. And it was immediate, because that's what happens when you break your orbital. And I said, as soon as he turned away and I got to see his eye, and you start to see that like looks like a spare tire underneath the eye developing as you're doing an interview, I'm like, that's a broken orbital, because you fracture that very thin plate behind your eyeball where your eyeball actually sits in the orbital. You fracture that, and then it just fills up with air, it fills up with blood, and it fells very, very quickly. Go watch my fight with Ruslan. My eye was swelling before I even stood up from the knockdown. And I'll tell you, and I've said this before when we talked about Joe Joyce when he stopped Dubois, you know, when we talked about Billy Joe Saunders when he fought Canelo Alvarez, breaking your orbital is scary. It is a very foreign feeling. It is a very unique, rare thing that happens, you know, happens in our sport. It's pretty rare, honestly, for as much as we get punched in our eyes so much. It is pretty rare. But when it does happen, it's shocking. And you saw what happened with Robesi. For me, I saw him panic because of something that happened to his face that's never happened before. And like I said, it's a very strange feeling. And he quit immediately. And I think if he could have got back to the corner or tried to fight through it a little bit, yes, I understand the double vision. I fought fights with double vision before. It's scary. But people have different ideas in their head about, you know, going out on their shield or risking, you know, life and limb. You know, because that's what it comes down to in this fight, in this sport. You're really risking your life. Risking your vision is no laughing matter at all. But I do think he could have fought on, and he could have tried to figure out a way. He just didn't want to be there anymore.
Yeah, there's no doubt he quit by definition. And when you use the word quit in boxing, it's worse than being labeled a cheater you're labeled a quitter.
Because quitters get forgiven, cheaters don't. I'm sorry. Cheaters get forgiven. Quitters don't. Excuse me. I said that backwards.
Twitters don't either.
Twitter sphere.
Twitter fingers don't. But you're right. Quitting in boxing. This discussion comes up a couple times a year when a fighter, and especially in a high magnitude fight like this, decides that they don't want to go on. We're sitting at home. We're watching. Or you're at the fight, and you pay money to go to the fight, or you're sitting at home, and you pay for a pay per view. For this one, it was on ESPN, and you feel like, come on, guys, entertain me. I would never have quit. It's just a discussion that we have in boxing. It's a discussion that happens in boxing every so often, where we have to kind of justify the scenario and all the proceedings in it. Whether, you know, it's his eye. Could he have gone on? Was he taking a lot of punishment? Do we like the guy too? Like, if we like, where is he at in his career? Is he towards the end of his career? Does he have a whole career ahead of him? Is he going to choose to fight another day? Like we saw with Daniel Dubois, he's like the ultimate story here of breaking his orbital bone, taking the knee, taking the L, and rebuilding his career to become a heavyweight champion now. So all that gets put into the sauce, and it becomes like a debate. We see guys on Twitter, or we see people criticism. He quit. Well, yes, he did. Well, he's the P word, and or he should have fought on, and he went out like the B word. all that. And it's like, all right, well, we need to just like kind of take a step back for a second, because yes, by definition, he did quit the fight. There's no other way no other word to use. He decided he didn't want to fight.
He no mas'd it. He put his hand up and turned his back. Yeah, it's a no mas.
Well, I will say this. I tweeted out no mas, and then my dad texted me. He was like, I saw your tweet. Like, Duran didn't have an injury. You know, he had diarrhea, or he had, like, problems with from taking a diuretic. Like, this was from an injury, and we don't know how it happened. Elbow or not.
No mas means no more. So that's that. Yeah. That's what I mean. You know, I know we always put it to, you know, the Duran fight because he, you know, he flat out quit because he just didn't want to be there anymore. But it's similar, it is kind of similar. So it just means no more. I'm like, no more. Putting your hand up, putting your head down means no more. I'm done.
What I mean
here
is, like, there was an injury for right Espinoza where Duran, I think it was like self inflicted, like a lot of reasons from what he admitted to, like taking a diuretic and. Or just being
sure. But he also said older. He was like, he also said, like, this guy will give me a rematch. I don't really want to be here right now. So that's essentially also, what it was. I think
another thing, too, with Duran, he just was like, he was almost like he knew he couldn't win. Like, he was so, like,
yeah, he's like, fuck it.
Want to fight that style. Well, you've seen that, too, with Lomachenko, Nicholas Walters.
Yeah.
We've seen guys just say, like, I'm not going to, like, forget this. Like, throw the hands up. Like, I'm never going
to win. What am I doing here? I can't win this. I'm getting embarrassed.
But that's like the ultimate no-no. Like, among boxing. Yeah. Like, among boxers. You're in the fraternity, Chris. You fought with a broken orbital bone. You decided.
But also, I was getting smashed. Not smashed, but I was getting completely beat by Pacquiao. And I was endlessly beyond, you know, winning on the scorecards. I still got up every time. I still kept trying to fight. It would have been very easy for me to be like, all right, well, I'm so far behind. What am I doing here? I'm in a guy who's very dangerous and keeps hurting me. I should get out of here, right? No, we don't do that.
No, that would
fighters
have been
don't do that
for your career. Horrible. Imagine, like, okay, you break you. This is why you're a fantastic co-host for this exact episode, because you broke your orbital bone and you decided to fight on, and then you were overmatched by a Hall of Fame generational great, where a lot of fighters would have said no mas, and you continue to fight. But imagine you. In the eighth round, you know, you're down, you know, numerous times, and you're like, I'm done. Like, you just waved it off in your corner. And think about the criticism you would take, number one. Like, I don't know if you get big fights after that. I don't know if you get the Khan
wouldn't.
Fight or
they wouldn't,
Spence
they
fight.
Wouldn't, they wouldn't have taken a chance on me. Absolutely not.
It's just a pride thing. And I'm not, this is like the conversation too, because every time I'm like, it's a pride thing. Doesn't mean that Robesti Ramirez isn't prideful. Like, you said it perfectly yourself. It's like, when it comes to the eyes, like, you get scared. Like, anyone. Like, if I look at my phone all day long, at the end of the night, my eyes feel like they're burning a hole in my face. And I'm like, this is kind of scary. So if you're in a ring and you're starting to see double vision from wherever it came from, elbow, punch, wherever, some people freak out. You didn't freak out. You decided to fight on. And you ultimately won and you got rewarded and it changed your life. I don't know what's going to happen to Ramirez, but my main question from this, should boxing fans criticize fighters for quitting in the ring?
Fans, I mean, I always think of that meme of like the fat guy with the bucket of chicken and the diet soda being like, ah, you should have pumped the jab. If it was me, I would have, you know, I would have went out there. You know, like I love that meme. I think the criticism is fair coming from fighters. I don't know about fans because, again, you're never going to know what that feels like. If you've never been punched in your face, you never broke your nose, you never broke your orbital, you never broke your hand in a fight where you're fighting for your life. I don't know those criticisms. I can't listen to that fat guy on the couch with the Diet Coke, you know, saying anything about this fighter who goes out there. You got to respect fighters who go in the ring. It's definitely not going to be Ribasi's shining moment. You know, it's going to mar his career. Can he come back? Absolutely. Duran did it. Duran is one of the only guys that I can remember in recent past who, Dubois as well, who, you know, showed that quit in them and also came back and made a great career. So you can get out of it, but you're putting yourself in a big hole. And that mar never goes away. Right. You if you've been labeled that, even if you come back and become an all-time great and become multi-time world champion and fight through it, think about the Klitschko brothers. Remember which one? Was it Vitaly or Vladimir? Vitaly quit on a shoulder injury against Chris Bird, and everyone called him a quitter. But then he came back to be one of the most dominant heavyweights for a very long time. So you can get yourself out of that hole, but no one ever forgets that. That's there forever. It's on your record. It's in the public idea of what you are. So it's like the iCloud, man. It's in the cloud. it doesn't go away. Everybody saw you quit. So it never goes away.
It's the culture of boxing. It's a tough man sport. A lot of machismo in it, and you're not supposed to quit. You're supposed to go out on your shield. You're supposed to be a warrior. All this and the other, but no one thinks about them as human beings. You know, no one thinks about them losing their eyesight or breaking an orbital bone. Who's going to look after these fighters when their career is over? No one sees them the 364 other days, or you know, to fight twice a year, the 363 other days. No one really sees, or no one takes care of them. There's no pension. They go on and on and on about why you shouldn't necessarily rush to criticize a fighter who decides it's their body and their injury. But that's what kind of boxing is. I mean, that's what sports are. Like, you criticize a guy.
I can't help but think about it. I mean, because it's, you know, obviously so just happened. But Israel Vasquez, you know, a guy who just passed away, rest in peace, you know, due to cancer, lost his battle to cancer. And I think he's 47, 48 years old, something like that. But think about the wars that he had. I think his eyesight was severely compromised permanently after the one of those Marquez fights. No?
Yeah.
I know he had a lot of eye problems after the fight. He's a hero. That man's a hero. Like, those fights are incredible. Those four fights with Marquez, you know, they went 2-2, you know, knocking each other down, knocking each other out, blood, guts, broken noses, everything. And even him in the first fight, he got labeled a bit of a quitter because he got stopped in the corner because he broke his nose badly, really bad. There was like lifeblood coming out of that nose all night long. And he took that to heart and he came back and he fought Marquez a rematch. He knocked him out. And then they fought again. He won a split decision. And then he fought again. He got, you know, at that point, he was really long in the tooth and got stopped. But listen, he went down as a hero. He came back from that. It wasn't the same. It wasn't like literally put his hand down and said, I'm done fighting today. But he did get stopped in the corner. And a lot of Mexican fans don't like that. They want you to go out there and go out on your back, go out on your shield. And Ribisi did not do that. And there's going to always be people, especially like you said, those machismo fueled Mexican fans, and a lot of the sport, you don't have to be Mexican to be that way, are going to look at that and frown on it for sure.
Yeah, that's the biggest takeaway from this fight. Unfortunately, we have not talked too much about Rafael Espinosa, who was landing early and often, who is really good. I agree with you. Like, I didn't have
fought very confidently too, supremely confident.
Yeah, this guy's just got a lot of good aura right now and has a lot of good momentum in his career. I agree what you said before about how I didn't have Ramirez up at the time of the stoppage. I thought it was close because Espinosa was landing the cleaner, harder shots. He was throwing more punches. Ramirez was more tactical and was more efficient. You know, he was throwing less punches, but they were landing just about the same. But I think Espinosa's punches were way more meaningful,
impactful,
and more crisp,
yeah,
impactful. Mm-hmm. And so you could see like a three in the heading into the six, maybe 3-2 Espinosa. I did not think Ramirez was winning the fight by any means. He was fighting on his back foot, and he was stinging Espinosa, but not like he was in the first go-around. I think Espinosa would have won the fight. I think he could have maybe stopped him, too, later on in the fight. So I didn't think that Ramirez was up on those cards that ESPN showed. But I will say this about Rafael Espinosa. This guy, I don't know how long he is for 126. I love the featherweight division. There are some really fun fights that could be made with him, unification fights. But this guy is huge. We see that with our eyes. He's
talented too. He's not just a weight bully,
right?
Or size.
Very
bully.
Good. Very good jab. Very good right hand. Good defense. Just everything. He weighed. This is a fight at 126. He rehydrated to 146 or 47 pounds,
That's crazy. They
showed it. They made it a point to show it on ESPN, and it's not by accident. Like HBO used to do this all the time. Part of the tail of the tape used to be the weight that they weigh tonight. And then boxing completely got away with that. I think fighters it's become like a big taboo topic in boxing where it's a question. We don't know what fighters rehydrate to, or it becomes like a thing we hold against fighters for being weight billies or rehydrating too much. HBO used to do this all the time. So whenever I see a network show that, like multiple times, and talk about that, is that they're trying to get to – they're trying to set something up. And what I think they're trying to set up is a fight between Rafael Espinosa and Emmanuel Navarrete at 130 pounds. I think Espinosa will move up. I think he will fight Navarrete, and I think that would be an awesome fight. Like, what are your thoughts on that fight? I think that's just like the next one. I think ESPN is very good at that. Top Rank is very good at finding their next fight.
Well, they're playing chess. They're setting the board. And I said it earlier. I mean, this fight makes way too much sense not to happen. If you're trying to make Espinosa the next star, which certainly seems that way. That's the way they're moving. And Top Rank plays, you know, 4D chess. They're always playing hands and moves ahead. And so in this situation, yeah, I mean, it makes a ton of sense to make this fight happen. Like you said, they planted that little what they call that Easter egg. No, look, yeah. He weighed 147. He's not going to be in 126 for too much longer. I heard before this fight that the only reason that he stuck around was because of the rematch with Ribeyse, obviously, which made a ton of sense too. But yeah, now get him up to 30, fight Navarrete. They both just fought last night, so they should be coming back around the same time. Once again, fight makes too much sense not to happen, but this is boxing and rational thought goes out the window, so we'll see.
Well, it would be unfortunate to see him not kind of unify at 126. Like,
I just don't think he can make it anymore, man. I told you I saw him at the Munguia fight in Arizona, and listen, a 126 pounder being eye to eye with me, but also filled out and wide shouldered. I'm like, he walked in behind Munguia. He looked bigger than Munguia. He walked in behind Munguia, and I'm like, yo, I go to Tim Bradley. I'm like, yo, is that Espinoza? And he turns around, he goes, yep. And I'm like, whoa. I got up and I shook his hand, and I was like, oh, what's up, Shannon? And mucho gusto, bro. But man, he is big. I don't know how he makes 26. He looked like a different person, literally a different person.
That and the fact that Nick Ball is one of the champions. He's not going to fight Nick Ball because the matchroom.
That would be hilarious, though. 5'2 to 6'1.
That would be an awesome stare down photo. Angelo Leo, I don't see him in that. Figueroa is fighting against Fulton. Luis Alberto Lopez is out. Ray Vargas is, we never know about him. Bruce Carrington, maybe, but they're not at the same like level right now. Carrington doesn't have a belt. It doesn't make any sense to put Carrington in there with Espinosa right now. So I would not be mad at an all-Mexican clash. Navarrete versus Espinosa, regular ESPN.
I would love to be at that fight, man. Oof.
First quarter of 2025, I can see that happening.
Do we have Mexican fans out there, or listeners?
Of course we do.
Yeah? Okay, good. Because I say it all the time. I love Mexican main events. I love going to fights where it's all Mexico, or at least, even like the Canelo fights. We have so much fun Canelo fight weeks, right, Dan?
And, oh, my God. Yeah.
And the Arizona shows when I did Munguia, like the top ranked shows, I love them. New Mexico, another great town with a lot of a strong Mexican fan base. I love going to those types of fights. Those are my favorite. Those are my favorite fights to go to.
I think they got a good thing brewing here with Arizona. They went there a bunch of times. And
it's a nice area. Like Glendale's has gotten really nice. Phoenix, that area is really getting built up. Everything's new. Everything's clean. It's very easy for the promotions in order, just logistically, how they maneuver everything fight week. It works.
Yeah, and you saw the crowd on Saturday night. Like, U.S. boxing market is not in the greatest spots right now, because a lot of the fights are just going overseas, and Canelo can sell tickets, Gervonta Davis can sell tickets. There's a few fighters that can sell tickets, and then it's like, all right, we have to manage our expectations. We put pretty much an all Mexican card in Arizona with a heavy Mexican population, and we scale it to like 10,000. That's the right business decision. And you saw on Saturday night, place was loud. There was a crowd. I was just like, it fired me up when that Espinosa, when they were doing his ring walk, and then they were doing his fighter introduction. I was like, there's an actual environment. There's a buzz in the crowd, and it got me fired up. Hopefully we see more of that. So Espinosa Navarrete, would not be shocked if that ends up, back in Arizona next year. And it's an awesome fight, and I'm all for that. What else happened on this card? Teofimo Lopez joined the desk with Mark Kriegel. Had a lot of interesting updates. Obviously talked about the Eddie Reynoso partnership, said that his dad is the one that pushed for it. His dad said that you need some fire back. I'm going to get you back to those Mason Menard days, those Richard Comey days, those Magdaleno days, which I think are kind of in the past because of, it just comes down to weight. 135 TO is different than 140 TO. Anyway, he seemed a little more mature. Then he was asked about names that he wants, and he brought up Devin Haney failed offer. He offered Devin Haney a fight, 55-45 split in favor of Teofimo, $4 million offer. Who knows the how real that is? We never know with these offers. But then he starts naming names like, who I want. He's like, Kriegel asks him, what's three names that you want? He says, Gervonta Davis, Boots Ennis, and Crawford. I don't know how realistic any of those fights are, though. I know the one I want to see the most. Teofimo versus Gervonta is like a can't-miss
fight.
Just two smaller guys. They, there's no weight problem there. Explosive, like everything. That fight was
super athletic, great boxing IQ. You know, even stature wise, I can see Pimo's not tall for 140, and obviously we know Tank is pretty short. But and we've seen them sparring back in the day when they were like kids. Like it's great, it's entertaining. I mean, high level stuff. Yeah, that's the fight. Those other ones don't even make sense to me. The boots and those kind of throwaways in my opinion. But Tank, if that could be made in a wet dream of a boxing fan, but yeah, that gets me fired up.
He was like, Teofimo was a little all over the place, like he is in any interview. Dropped an F-bomb on ESPN and then started thanking Disney in the same. He said sorry, and then he started thanking Disney, like, in went on some weird Disney like rant about how awesome they are, how many people he's shaken hands with over the years, the best partnership ever. It was nice to see him at a Top Rank show, and it was nice to see him on ESPN. It was nice to see him say that we will be fighting in the first quarter of 2025. So I guess that him and Top Rank have put their issues behind them, or the litigation behind them.
Resolve the issues, which is a good thing. He's one of the best fighters in the world. We need that guy busy. And we didn't talk about this. What about Miller Lite partnering with Top Rank?
That's great.
Big move. You didn't see that?
I did see that.
Yeah.
That means something. It might not mean much to the common folk out there, or like the casual fan, but whenever you can bring something as popular as Miller Lite or something as like that
big brand. Yeah.
And team it up with boxing, and that's huge. And that's big. It was Bud Light for a while. And
yeah, I personally don't like Bud Light. I just don't like the taste.
Drinking it or like they're where they stand?
No, I don't care about the stance. I'm talking about the drinking. I don't like the flavor of it. I'm definitely a much more of a Miller Light guy than a Bud Light. I can't drink Bud Lights.
Ugh. Bud Lights were the choice in like high school. Like I could drink, like I'm not a big drinker, but I remember like drinking like 12 of them and like it was nothing.
Yeah, it's basically hydration at that point.
Bud Light, yeah. So
Miller Light's pretty similar though. Miller Light's very, very low alcohol content.
Yeah,
I just think the flavor is better.
Saying like these are heavy like Guinnesses here, like it's light
or
beer,
like IPAs or anything.
Yeah, I haven't drank a beer in a while. I don't do gluten.
Yeah, you're an anti gluten warrior.
Oh, man, what I would do just to drink a beer, like a beer is amazing. I miss
beer is amazing.
Someone asked me recently, like, what do you miss the most in terms of not eating gluten? And it was like bagels, pasta,
pizza, beer.
Beer. Like cracking open a cold beer is like one of life's greatest joys. And I miss that.
Ben Franklin, I think, was quoted, and he said, beer is proof there is a God and that he loves us.
I feel like I've seen that sign somewhere in Vegas or like on a t-shirt. Like
or beer. Just in some random beer bar. Just
beer quotes.
Beer quotes.
Well, but with Bud Light, Teofimo like took credit for that. That was like when Tio was in his really delusional, at his most delusional. He would wear the Bud Light hat, and he would say like, "I'm the reason why Top Rank and Bud Light are together." Like hilarious. Or like he would like tag Disney and be like, "You know, I met with Disney CEOs. Like Disney's talking to me. I'm like, dude, I love you, Tio, but like." Disney's not talking to you. Like they don't even know who you are. You're a boxer. Like ESPN and Top Rank are most likely going their separate ways at the end of their rights deal in August of next year. Like they're on at 10:30 at night. Like we could discuss that too. Like I've heard plenty.
Thank God those fights were short the other night, because that's late, man.
That's not a Top Rank thing. Like people are like, I usually make a big stink about it when they do a triple header and they start at 10 p.m. and it's usually after UFC fight night, or it's usually UFC has a pay-per-view. So the UFC will do their show from 8 to 10, the prelims, then they'll put boxing on afterwards, or the boxing will come on after college football, or boxing will be pushed back like it was the case for this one to 11 p.m. because there's like a volleyball game or like there's a soccer game that goes into overtime. Like that's kind of like how boxing is treated at ESPN, and I'm not shocked if boxing fans out there can see that Top Rank and ESPN their rights deal ends middle of next year and summer of next year. And we'll talk about this right now. Bob Arum did an interview with, I think it was the women's show with Christina, what's her name? Cynthia Conte. And Bob Arum told the interviewer that we're shopping around Top Rank. We have a meeting with DAZN scheduled to potentially put Top Rank fights on DAZN. That would be crazy.
That's probably what's going to happen. mean, DAZN seems to be taking over everything. And if the ESPN thing falls through, which there's been mutterings of, it's been mutterings for that for years, let's be honest. But we'll see. I mean, listen, if all your boxing is in one place, is that such a bad thing?
Well,
for the fans, probably not. But for the fans,
the prices would go. Expect DAZN to go through the roof if they get top rank. They're already increasing their prices. They're not lowering their prices. They're only going to keep increasing them to cover
nothing.
The cost.
No, like, prices never go down, Dan.
Very, very rarely, unless you're Turkey and you can. Money doesn't matter, and you can just lower pay per view prices just because a few tweets. But if top rank, here's what top rank wants to do. They want to, from what I've heard, I don't know, I haven't any insider information. They want to do what kind of the NFL does. The NFL has their product, and Top Rank has their product, and the NFL gives it out to different packages to different networks. So Thursday Night Football is to Amazon. Mm-hmm. Netflix is getting into the mix. CBS has their package. Fox has their package. There's streaming. There's broadcast. I don't think boxing is in a position where they can do broadcast and streaming. I think it's going to go all streaming. So from what Aram has said and from what I've heard out there is that you're not going to see – you could potentially not see Top Rank on one platform. Mm-hmm. It could be some on ESPN. It could be some on Amazon.
Well, PBC did that when they first came out, right? They were on Fox. They were on ABC. They were, you know, we were all over. So
that's what a lot of
– Spike. I fought on Spike TV. I fought on like four different networks from when I fought PBC. It was different. It was a different network. Yeah, everywhere. HBO, Showtime, Spike, Triller.
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 I don't think Top Rank's getting into bed with Triller, but this is what the all the other sporting leagues do. So Top Rank will be doing that to a lesser degree. So it'll be interesting to see. Like, it doesn't mean that ESPN is done with boxing. Like, I've heard things where
maybe they'll be on Pro Box TV.
Top Rank.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's essentially a network. I mean, they let us use a lot of their fighters all the time, their prospects.
Well, think about it. The Top Rank has a ton of upcoming fighters. That's what Top Rank
does. The roster is huge.
It's different.
They keep their guys busy. It's not like I know we always knock PBC for the guys not fighting that often, you know, but Top Rank keeps their people busy.
That and they have a lot of the next generation. It's very attractive. It's an attractive roster where they get them to a certain point. Yes, they have had some famous breakups. Floyd Mayweather, Oscar De La Hoya, Shakur Stevenson, Terrence Crawford. You almost get to a certain point as a fighter with your stature and where you are, where Top Rank can't really do anything for you anymore, and you move on. And
that's rare. That's fine. Those are the biggest of the big.
Well, it happened a lot though, like Cotto as well. Like it's.
But then you got a guy like Tim Bradley, who's like a Top Rank lifer. You know,
he's very loyal and he stayed. And he got rewarded.
But also, I don't think he could have
$15 million.
Right. I don't think he could have stepped out and done it on his own the way that Floyd Mayweather or a Devin Haney could have. You know, it's very, very, very different scenario.
Well, it is a different scenario because this is why boxing is different than any other sport. It's like Bradley stayed because he had Manny Pacquiao to fight. And Top Rank was like, all right, we're going to put you in there potentially two or three times with Pacquiao. Or you can go to PBC or you can go to whoever at the time was the other promoters that were of note. And you're at the back of the line, or you might not have that opportunity. So a lot of it goes case by case. I feel like with Floyd, he left because he had a grand plan, and he had Al Haymon in his ear to leave. De La Hoya, same thing too. He went and started his own promotion.
Oh, De La Hoya is a different thing. He's his own universe. He can.
Well, if you go to it more recently, Crawford and Shakur. Shakur felt like he was disrespected, or they couldn't get him the big fights. They never got him. Lomachenko, they never got him some of the other names, so he left. And same thing with Crawford. Crawford's like, I wanted Pacquiao, and I never got Pacquiao. Crawford is a different case because he just, you know, he was getting like $4 million to fight Amir Khan. Like, he should be thanking Top Rank, but they had a pretty bad split too. But he was getting a pretty high guarantee for mismatches.
Yeah, I mean, Amir Khan was a total mismatch. And
Kell Brook,
you know, an aged
$4 million to fight Kell Brook?
Shop worn Kell Brook that got knocked out with a jab.
Bro, that's an insane deal. And now he's moved on to bigger and better.
Those two foes fought each other and made an entertaining
Converse Brook.
Yeah, they fought over there and people like
that's
really
a money
in.
Grab of all money grabs.
Yeah.
Yeah, Honda so we'll beating. See what, yeah. Unbelievable. We'll see what happens with Top Rank. It was interesting stuff. It's not until the summer where we'll see where there goes. It was a 7-year deal that ESPN signed with Top Rank, and now we're at the end of it. And I think it's been pretty good. I mean, there were like ESPN getting boxing back at a high level. Like, there's been, outside of a few pay-per-views, majority of the fights have been on regular ESPN. Mm-hmm. We've gotten some awesome fights. You got to call some fights, and it was
great to work. Fantastic working with them. They were the tip top. I've worked with everybody. ESPN, there's nothing like it.
It just kind of sucks that, you know, potentially ESPN's the last network, traditional broadcast network, to air boxing. Everything is streaming, and this could be the last one to fall out. Like, no Showtime, no HBO, now no ESPN. I mean, it's scary, but it's also like not the worst thing for boxing to be streaming. I think fans have gotten very used to watching fights on apps.
Yeah, it's the wave. It used to be the wave of the future. It's the wave of the now. And I think we've talked about this over the past couple of years, but while we've been doing this show, like, yeah, streaming is the future, guys. This is where it's going. Unfortunately, I was fighting during like the transition. It's like, I remember like my older fans, I mean, in terms of their age, their chronological age, being like, hey, what do I watch the fight? Like, what's it on? You know, I'm like, well, it's on Dazn. What's Dazn? You know, it's like, it's hard for those older fan bases to get on the streaming platforms, but it's becoming more and more, universal at this point, that everyone, even my grandpa watches his Fox or CNN on a streaming platform. So
yeah, everyone has a Fire Stick. Everyone knows how to work. You know what's funny is watching one promoter one by one, each promoter one by one bend the knee to DAZN or bend the knee to streaming. It was Leonard Ellerbe. He said, "We're not putting our fighter on some app," and then now they're fighting on Amazon. Or Frank Warren, famously over the years, has criticized DAZN for being behind a paywall, or you're fighting in front of, we don't know how many people you're even fighting for. Now he's in bed with DAZN. Bob Arum has always criticized the apps or DAZN. Now he's taking meetings with DAZN. So you go where the money is, and DAZN right now is trying to scoop up all the promoters, which I think would be good for fight fans. And hopefully it means that if you're all under the same network, which I believe is the biggest cause of a biggest roadblock for fights not getting made, is the network stuff. If you're all under the same umbrella, you would think that fights would be easier to make. But we've seen this before where promoters are under the same umbrella and fights don't get made. But it's one positive to look at with all that. Let's go over to the matchroom card on the zone. Richardson Hitchens defeats Liam Paro. Close fight for the first four rounds until Hitchens just took over, man. That jab was lethal. That right hand, lethal. Really, really good performance from Hitchens. Not the most exciting style. And you might not go back and ever watch Hitchens versus Paro ever again. But this is what Hitchens is. He is a nightmare to deal with. He has a really good jab. He is a very good boxer. And he is now the IBF champion at 140.
Got another New York champion. That's awesome. There's not many of us, so that's good.
50 Cent posted about him.
Yeah, guy I used to spar with all the time in Brooklyn. Richardson Hitchens. Yeah, great jab, long, big for the weight class. But I'm going to say this, man. He's disciplined. He is a disciplined left hand. He doesn't take risks. He worked on his right hand because he was fighting a southpaw. He's a sniper out there, man. He's out there being a sharpshooter. Stays long, uses his size, his reach advantage, gets that jab going, does not take risks, does not want to trade with you, fights. And he makes you fight on his terms, and he doesn't go out of his shell. He might talk a lot before the fight, talk a lot even during the fight. He does not break his style, and that shows a tremendous amount of discipline and focus. And to do that for 12 rounds, man, it's impressive, especially with a guy like Paro, who, he can be tricky. He's got some pop. He's a southpaw. We did our last show and we were kind of talking about this, and I didn't think about this fight enough. And then I'm thinking about it. And I'm like, nah, Hitchens is win this fight. I think the size is a matter. And then I saw them weigh in and I was like, yeah, well, Paro's a much smaller guy. And Paro didn't look like to be in that great physical condition. Did you notice that at the weigh-in?
Yeah, I know.
He looked like a little soft in the midsection. I didn't know if he usually looks like that. But that was odd to see a guy at 140, who didn't look all that lean, in the midsection. So, but as soon as I saw that, and when we did our picks, I had Hitchens by decision.
Yeah, I'm not trying to take anything away from Paro, but he was like the new kid on the block. Like, he beats the Boogeyman and Matias. No one had that. He's this new young fighter. That
but
no
like
one
he
really
beat like Montana
about.
Love, who was just ripe for the picking. He beat that guy. Who was that other Aussie guy? Who was like Brock, who literally was not could not fight. He just had a great Sterling record. And then you know he got Matias and he exposed him. So yeah, he had like this run of these three guys that he beat that were all name noteworthy. But they, if you really look under the microscope, they weren't that good. Whereas you look, and if you look at Hitchens, it's the opposite. If you kind of, you need to really finally look at his last couple fights. I'm gonna pull up his record right now. I had it up before. Where is it?
He's been tested.
Yeah, he's had a good run. So the Lemos fight, which actually in hindsight looks worse because he struggled mightily in that fight, and then Lemos got absolutely demolished by Keyshawn Davis. Jose Cepeda, Chon, super old, but guess what? He still 121 awaited him. John Bauza, who's talented, 188, dropped him. Yep. Yomar Alamo is a guy that actually gave Paro trouble, and he completely dominated him and stopped him. So he's coming off a string of victories that none of the guys are really noteworthy per se, but if you really look at the performances, you're like, you know what? This guy's good. So that's what we got. Another world champion at 140.
Another champ, we'll get to that in a second. Not trying to take anything away from Paro, but you just kind of peeled it back a little bit, poked some holes in his last three wins. But, you know, he was this Australian fighter. They come with a lot of fanfare to the States, and, you know, he has a big puncher.
Promoters love them. There's a strong market there.
Big puncher. We all that above. We were looking at Paro versus Haney, all that and the other. But you had to get past the guy in Hitchens, and I would say Paro just didn't have any answer. After the fourth round, he got completely dominated. He could not figure out the jab of Hitchens. Hitchens threw, I'm looking at this right now, threw 50 more jabs than power shots. He landed 30% of his jabs. He landed 30% overall. Hitchens, he limited Paro to just 17%. And that's what Hitchens is. I mean, he's going to jab you to death. He's going to have a laser right hand. He's going to, you know, be 60-40 in terms of jab to power ratio, and he's going to keep
it's usually wider. But he had a southpaw in front of him, so he had to throw the right hand more. Usually, more jab.
What does that say? That just speaks to his
discipline. Like I said, discipline and focus.
To his game plan. Yep. I mean, a great game plan. You know, he's as a person and personality, like he could be a little like frustrating with his smack talk, and you know he's looking for all this validation from fans and validation. You know, he takes that boring thing to heart a little bit, but not in the ring. You know, why is Devin Haney so successful? Because you know he fights kind of the same way as Hitchens, and he just doesn't care what it looks like. He doesn't care if they're booing in the crowd, doesn't care if he's not listed as one of the most exciting fighters. He cares about getting that W, and Hitchens is undefeated and
gets the win and
get the bag. Love that. Looking at 140, interesting division. You got
this weight class has been topsy turvy for the past 18 months. Really strange.
Now we have a new champ. We have Hitchens, IBF champ. Teofimo, WBC champ. Venezuela is the WBO champ. And then you have Alberto Puello, who is the WBC champion who got elevated with Devin Haney as the champion in recess. Like Hitchens, Teofimo, that's what Hitchens called for after the fight. Don't see that happening. Teofimo did not mention Richardson Hitchens' name. Would it be? I think you'd give Teofimo fits. I think you'd give anyone fits.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I've been saying that for years. I think he gives everybody an issue. I don't know if he beats all the guys. I don't think he's going to be the guy who's going to rise to the top and take over all the titles, but gives everybody trouble. He's a difficult style. He's really big for the weight class, cuts a lot of weight. Tall, long, 74-inch reach at 140 is crazy. And he's disciplined, man. Those guys, you got to get him out of his shell, and he's just not shown to be susceptible to that. But very strange weight class. Valenzuela. He's another guy. He's tall for the weight class, 5'11". He's got power, though.
Yeah, he's fighting Gary Antoine Russell.
Yeah, I love that. Coming off a loss, gets right into another title fight. Puello is tough. He looked really good against Russell. Actually, I was impressed. He fought a very smart game plan. So very interesting weight class. A lot of fights that I'd have to really look and study to figure out who's going to come out on top.
None of these guys are calling for unifications. Though. Like I give,
I know
besides Hitchens, I give him credit for calling out Teofimo. That could be a great New York
fight. But that's also the biggest money fight available for him, too. It's not just unification.
Like, Hitchens-Haney would not be a aesthetically pleasing fight by any means. No, it would be like the Spider-Man meme.
I don't think there'd be any clamoring for that matchup.
They're going to be staring at each other. They're the same fighter, essentially. So what's going to happen in that fight? Like, I think the name recognition, and I think it could be made.
I wouldn't say they're the same fighter, because I think Haney's a lot more offensive. He's got a deeper bag. He throws uppercuts. He throws body shots.
But when Haney is the more explosive offensive fighter in a fight,
it's not a good sign for
a good matchup for like a barn burner. It'd be a good matchup for boxing fans. If Hitchens Haney's the next fight, I'll be excited for it. I think a lot of fans will be excited for it, but it's not going to.
The trash talk will be great. The back and forth will be excellent.
I'll tell you that Hitchens, he's just a Brooklyn kid. Like he can talk, and you might not love everything he's saying, but he's going to drum up some stuff. He got a little bit of a personality. But Hitchens Haney, I maybe could happen. I mean, Haney does have like a decent working relationship with Matchroom. I think Haney's just waiting for the Ryan Garcia rematch, or just waiting. I think. I don't know what's going on with Haney or Teofimo. Teofimo's not mentioning any of these champions. Valenzuela is fighting Russell, like I just talked about. Puelo is just a dude who's really tough, but like no one's exactly clamoring to watch him fight. So weird division, like you said. Topsy-turvy in terms of the parity of who's champ. Really tough to see any of these champs face off with each other. I guess the closest we can get to a unification is Haney versus Hitchens. Don't see that. I don't see Devin Haney's first fight back being Richardson Hitchens.
No.
And the IBF thing too, the rehydration clause. Do you think that's like deterring guys from getting in the ring, like fighting for the IBF title? That 10-pound rehydration thing.
It could. I mean, it's a really bad rule. It makes
it's
zero
a fucking
sense.
Stupid rule. It's
so stupid.
I think it hinders Hitchens' chances of fighting someone.
Yeah. Yeah. Guys, if you got a bigger guy in the weight class, he's not going to want to do that. Dude, Haney would have trouble with that. He puts on a lot of weight at the fights. So
that's what I meant. Like, yeah, what the plus is you fight for a title, and Haney, in theory, could be WBC and IBF champion. I don't know if that matters to Haney anymore. But like on top of it, you have to come in the next day at underneath 150, where that's been a problem for Haney. Like Teofimo, I don't see him being a problem for him. He's a smaller guy.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
That rule is so ridiculous, and I don't know if that will hurt Hitchens, but. Hats off to Hitchens. I mean, we have a new name at 140. This guy has
And we got a New Yorker, baby. We got a New Yorker. We got a Yankee hats off to him.
Yeah. We have a New Yorker, and I did ask why was this fight in Puerto Rico. I saw a ton of empty seats, and that's not a knock on Matchroom. They do a phenomenal job across the globe of putting asses in seats and promotion. I just don't understand why this fight was in Puerto Rico. There's neither were Puerto Rican. Like Puerto Rican fans are some of the best in all of boxing. I've called fights in the middle of nowhere in Puerto Rico, and they turn out. That part kind of sucks. So you talk about New York. Let's get Hitchens.
Yeah, so if you look at the whole card, like Liam Paro, Australia, Richardson Hitchens, Brooklyn kid, Mark Castro, you know, Mexican American, lost to a Argentinian. Like, and then we had an all Puerto Rican matchup with Henry LeBron and Chris Diaz.
Yeah, that was nice. That was a good one.
Jaleel Hackett lost. Another guy got upset. And then Yankiel Rivera Figueroa. I like him, man. He's good. Flyweight. He's a stud. He's one of those guys that's going to move super fast. Like he's 6-0 and he's on these cards fighting 10 rounders, world champion. So, no, he's not a world champion. Excuse me. He's a silver champ. But
silver champ.
But yeah, man, two upsets on that card. Two upsets. Yeah. Jaleel Hackett from undefeated, highly touted prospects. Jaleel Hackett loses. Mark Castro. I'm sorry. I'm jumping the gun on you, Dan. My bad. I know you're the
quarterback.
You're the quarterback of the show. But I'm segueing without you.
No, that's perfect segue. That's like we got telepathy here. We're on the same topic and the same how I want to end the show. So Jaleel Hackett. Loses. He's a prospect, highly touted prospect of a matchup. Mark Castro, aka the Elon Musk lookalike, loses. Who was flirting with losses for a while now? Finally, gets that L on his record. But another highly touted prospect out of the amateur system. Both lose on the same card. Julian Williams on Twitter says, the Matchroom matchmaker needs to be fired. How can you put these guys in there and serve, get losses? Eddie Hearn replies, says, what the hell are you talking about? Like if Hackett and Castro can't beat these guys, then they're not the goods. And right. It doesn't mean their career is over. I usually agree with a lot of Julian Williams' takes. He's a really good boxing mind and seems like a really rational guy. He has a lot of Twitter takes out there. This is an L take from him. I 100% agree with Eddie. Eddie went on the offensive with one of his interviews saying, listen, if you can't beat these guys, then you don't belong with Matchroom. And I thought it was a fun conversation where there's two ways to build a career. You would know this perfectly. Like soft touches, okay, that's great for first 5 to 10 fights. But eventually, you're going to have to get in there tough as a prospect. And in these 50-50 fights that I call for MVP with undefeated fighters, like those are the ones you don't really hear about. You don't really see. You just see on the box rec. But those are the ones that like separate prospects from moving on to the next level. And that's what happened with Hackett and Castro.
It seems like we're in a new era now. We're not getting the soft touches, the 20-0s. You know, you get those 20 fights that you're heavily favored, supposed to win all of them, and not even really. You're going to get tested a little bit here, a little bit there. That's how things were in like the 90s, the early 2000s. We're not really seeing that anymore. We're seeing a lot of guys coming with big amateur backgrounds are going right into world title fights within 10 fights. We're not seeing that old formula. It's like, all right, you get to 20-0, now you get a title shot. You're seeing guys tested a lot earlier. And listen, when you test some people break and they lose. Mark Castro lost this weekend. Jaleel Hackett lost this weekend. And you, as a promoter, you can't put on these prospects versus cab driver fights and build a card. So especially because now everything's on TV. Remember back in the day, dude, those fights weren't on TV. When you had guys getting blasted out by prospects, those weren't on TV. Nobody wants to see that. You know, it was deep on the undercard that was off TV. Now everything is filmed. Everything is out there. Everything's streamed. Yeah. So you can't have those matchups anymore.
Good point.
Because it's really going to turn people off. So yeah, I tip my hat to Eddie's take on that. It's like, hey, what are you going to do? He's supposed to win this fight. He didn't win the fight. Okay.
I think fans are like now have turned a new leaf and like they want to see prospects in there tough. Like they want to see what they're made of. And there are some people out there that didn't really believe in Mark Castro. And he goes in there and he has a bunch of close calls and then he loses. And like, all right, yeah, like you're rewarded for your thought on him or he's the goods and you see him move on. Like that's the only way to do it. And I just thought it was an interesting take from Julian Williams. And I thought that Eddie, he was given like a layup and he dunked it home. And because I believe in that. And we see it from Top Rank. We see it from a lot of promoters that are now putting these guys in tougher. I will say this, finally.
Top Rank is ruthless, though, because when you lose, they cut you immediately.
I don't hate ruthless. That either, but...
Ruthless.
Who was the heavyweight? I didn't put it in my notes. That's why I'm forgetting. The heavyweight, the Olympic kid who fought on Saturday
Torres.
Night. Did you see the guy he fought?
Yeah. Yeah, like, unfortunately, yeah.
What the hell? Like, come on! Like, this is not
doing?
Like.
Yeah.
It just didn't aesthetically looked horrible.
Like, that's exactly what I was saying. Like, you're not supposed to see those fights. Those fights are not supposed to. Those are supposed to be deep in your record. No one's supposed to know about them. You're not supposed to be on ESPN.
But Torres is like people know who he is. He's not like this dude is like being featured in content. He's got a really great personality. The problem is they can't find anyone for him. Like his last fight was more of a step up. Like I understand keeping him busy. That's another thing too. Like goes to your point of, you know, the streaming. There's social media clips now. You can watch almost every fight on a card on ESPN Plus. So yeah, that would have been a dark fight. You know, if you want to get you one more fight or Richard before the end of the year. We found a guy in Arizona, you know, he might look like your cousin here and you're going to destroy him and there's going to be zero pushback. But you know, we got you a fight and it just so happens to be, it's all over Twitter. It's now, it just doesn't look aesthetically pleasing, but that's just the world we live in.
Yeah. I mean, I like the push that we're getting lately, the move that we're getting more competitive fights with these guys coming up. Torres, they strike me as they don't really know what to do with him. You know, like I think they're afraid to step him up too much because he's just heavyweight's
kind of in no man's land.
Yeah, he's a tweener. You know, he's you know, he's not really big enough for the weight class these days. Like, how do you step him up when you got guys who are 6'5" and can punch? I thought he looked good in his last fight. He had that step up fight against our man from Philly. Oh, I'm drawing a blank.
It's all right. Yeah, I didn't even like think about talking about this on the show. It just came up like where we're talking about fighters being stepped up at the right time, and I totally agree that with Torres, they don't know what to do. Like, they do know what to do, but they don't know how to. Like, it's just taking.
Well,
a little
they're
bit of time
being cautious. They're being cautious because
Toprak knows what they're doing.
Yeah, he had a great story coming out of the Olympics. So I understand they're trying to hold on to their guy a bit, but it's just it's got to be dark, man. you can't put these on TV
or put them on Twitter too. Like I didn't watch it, but I opened up Twitter and I watched him just six punch combination on this poor guy, and I'm like, geez, this is what are we doing here? Mm-hmm. All right. That's our show for this week. Hope you enjoyed it. Hope you have a great week. We'll be back later. I'm heading out to Orlando for my final trip of 2024 for Most Valuable Prospects 10 over on DAZN. I'll be on the call alongside Wade Plem and Nonito Donaire, our guy. I love going to Orlando. It's a fun trip. So I'll be calling some fights. So the next time you see me, I'll be doing the show from my hotel room.
And I will be in Plant City. We got fights this Wednesday in Pro Box TV. And then I will be flying out to do a studio show for Munguia for ESPN International. So I'll be there this
weekend.
Where are
you doing that?
In Las Vegas.
Oh, wow. All right. So we got to figure out when we're going to do the next show. We got to figure out where we're doing it from.
It's my last trip of the year myself.
My last work trip. 13 trips this year.
Oh, I always said I should have kept count of every fight I called for like years. That would have been cool to be like,
you did a lot of fights. 300 fights. We both called a lot of fights, but a lot of trips this year, whether it was PBC or it was Most Valuable Prospects. Very lucky guy. When I look at all those travel destinations, I'm hoping next year it's a little more variety in where I go, because all my trips are either Vegas or Orlando. I had.
Dude, it's nice. It's nice though when you find a rhythm on a place.
Orlando.
I've been a million different places, and I still do travel a lot of different spots. But I return visits are kind of nice, even though I hate Las Vegas. But I know the routine. Like
you know what you're getting.
I know which flights to take. I know when I can get out. I know what to do. I got my routine. I'm set. Because you know how it is when you're calling fights. Like, it's a lot of work, guys. You gotta do a lot of research.
Yeah.
You're not like on vacation when you get to location. Like, you're working. You're in your room a lot. You know, you're working out, you're staying sharp, you're getting your sleep in. You're avoiding your friends so they don't take you out all night. So.
Well, it's hard, but Nonito Donaire.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he's an animal. He's got a whole different essence.
He really is. And you'll walk in Orlando, there's a bar next to the pool. Mm-hmm. And it's like a restaurant. And it's on the way to my room. And you almost have to like take the longer route not to walk
to
past
avoid
the bar.
To avoid Nonito because he's there.
Be like, not just him.
Hey,
just
come here.
Just like anyone. They'd be like, or Nonito, like, yo, Canobio, come over here. I got
that's fight hotels in general, though.
I got a mojito for you. And I'm like, how do you say no to that?
Nah, you don't. You do not.
You end up drinking with Nonito Donaire and you have amazing stories, and you're like, all right, I'll go study later. That's awesome. Anyway, we'll leave you with that. And enjoy your week. We'll see you later on in the week. Protect yourself at all times. Keep your hands up at all times. Stay out of those DMs, everybody. Goodbye.
You saw the game-winning play once, but have to replay it 3 times on the way back to the hotel, because some moments don't end at the buzzer. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.